Here is Orr at the point, winding up the drive. Tony Esposito saves again.
Shot and a save by Esposito. And on Gregorio, a shot and another save by Esposito. Unbelievable. Esposito stops it. Breakaway and Barber is stopped by Tony as he gets the leg out. A beautiful save by Esposito. And the whistle blows. What a play.
And he drives one that's stopped by Esposito.
And Tony Esposito is being absolutely mobbed by his teammates.
It's Dave Plyer back with you on 720 WGN. So if you're a Blackhawks fan in Chicago, there was an era of greatness that you grew up with. And for me, it was Keith Magnuson, Bill White, Dennis Savard, and Tony Esposito. Now, Tony spent 15 years with the Blackhawks and in 2008 was named one of the ambassadors to the Chicago Blackhawks organization. As the Blackhawks convention continues through this weekend in downtown Chicago, Tony continues to create excitement for the team. He was named one of the NHL's 100 greatest players of all time. And now number 35, Tony Esposito joins us tonight. Well, good evening to you once again, Tony.
Thank you, Dave. It's a pleasure to be talking to you.
Yeah, same here, pal. So here we are, Blackhawks Convention Weekend already. Always a treat to see you there. Hockey has been in your blood for so many years. How old were you when you first started playing hockey, Tony?
I started skating when I was two or three. Soon I started with double blades instead of the single one. Because, you could hardly walk, so you couldn't skate too well.
Right.
They just strapped on your shoes, little shoes, and you just went around the little backyard. We had a little wee rink in the backyard my dad made. And then we'd learn that way, and we'd have a hockey stick and lean on it. And then finally you get to the single blade, and you really thought you were a big guy then when that happened. And my brother and I'd be playing out in the yard, and having a good time. And that's how we developed to our skating abilities, and we did that for a few years. And then naturally, when you get to be in grade school, every school had their own rink outside during the winter. So we were able to learn on that on the ice, and, some of the teachers would teach us.
And hockey really was a way of life up north, wasn't it? I mean, that's really what you did in your free time.
Well, I'm from Sault Ste. Marie in the winter. Sault Ste. Marie, I don't know if you're familiar where that is, but that is in Canada, right on Lake Superior. Anyway, you get once it gets to be December and you get the snow comes, the snow doesn't leave until the middle of March. So basically, you can have outdoor ice and there's not much else sports that you can really play. And I grew up with hockey, so every day we'd be out there playing.
And you were a goaltender even as far back as high school, but I've read this before, you found it to be a bit stressful and you tried your hand for a while being a forward. What made you really stick to goaltending?
I had a little problem, temper problem.
Okay.
And I was too probably physical, and I get, I get carried a little too carried away probably, and that was part of it. And the other thing was, it just seemed like I was better in goal than I was as a forward. So where do you end up? You end up where when coaches are picking a team, they put you where you think you're best, and so I ended up in a goal. And in those days, I had no face masks or anything.
Right, right. Which
most other guys were afraid of the puck and it didn't seem to bother me. And but my mother used to get angry because I used to get hit and cut sometime,
I'm sure.
A bit.
Yeah, I'm sure.
So she wanted to try to get me out of there, out of the net all the time. I played forward when we were just horsing around. I only played goal when we had big hockey, that was only a couple times, maybe once or twice a week.
Well, then from there you went to Michigan Tech. How did you get there?
I was playing hockey in Sault Ste. Marie, minor hockey. And, there was an opportunity. They had scouted me as some scouts for the colleges. And I got an opportunity to get a scholarship. Michigan Tech, and there wasn't a lot of teams in those days that, you know.
Right, I figured
WHA.
Yeah, I figured there wasn't a lot of choices either, yeah.
Well, there was that league, and then you had the Eastern League, Boston area. There was only two leagues.
Sure.
But they were pretty good hockey because there was, you know, there wasn't a lot of players, and, you know, there wasn't a lot of schools, and the guys wanted to go to school, a lot of us. Then got a scholarship, which was great because it saved your parents a lot of money, and so
that's right.
It was tremendous. You know, you get an education and you play hockey, and then you see what happens.
And then you know, it was so fast. You went pro in '68 with the Vancouver Canucks. I mean, that was a pretty fast paced choice to go over.
Well, what happened was I was on Montreal's list. They had a list in those days. They'd see you scout. They'd see you, and if you weren't on some other team's list, there was only six teams, as you know, the original six.
Yeah.
And they put me on their list early, and I was their property and turned over with them in '67. And they shipped me out to Vancouver, which was great for me because they were in the Western Hockey League, a pretty good league, minor league, and I got to play every game. So and I had a very mediocre team, so I got a lot of work.
Well, and when you faced your, you know, when you played your first game, was it your first game that you faced your brother Phil when he was with Boston?
Yeah, we tied 2-2 in Boston, and Phil scored both goals.
Both goals on you, right? That's what I remember.
That was funny. Well, you know, he was scoring a lot of goals, and I was happy to get to tie, to tell you the truth. We were going into Boston. Boston had Phil and Bobby Orr and a bunch of good hockey players at the time. And Boston Garden was tough to play in. So I came out with a tie. My biggest concern was going into that game was getting blown out.
Yeah, right.
And that was I was worried about.
I mean, I have to assume that you and your brother were pretty competitive those days with each other.
Oh, sure.
Yeah.
Sure, you want to win all the time and... you know, there was no mercy on the ice, I'll tell you.
I bet. No, I bet.
None at all.
And when you joined the Hawks, okay, in '69, you joined as a result of an intra-league draft. What was that?
Well, what happened was in order to supplement the weaker teams, what they did was they made the everybody that who had an order of a draft pixie. And the team that finished dead last in the interleague draft gets first pick.
Sure, okay.
So Chicago Blackhawks finished dead last with a pretty hockey team, I thought, because I played against them when I was with Montreal.
Right.
And we beat them 5-3 in the game, and we should have never beat them. Chicago outplayed us, outworked us, outshot us. But we got two cheap goals. And I said, if that team ever gets a decent goalie, they're going to be really tough. So as it was in the interleague draft, they had first pick. And they had to protect me or Gump Worsley in Montreal at the time. And Gump was a veteran. And they kept him and put me in the draft. So I got picked up by the Blackhawks. That was the... one of the most happiest moments of my life, I'll tell you that.
I bet.
I wanted to get out of first. I didn't want to be up in Montreal, and I went to school in the States and that, and I had more. I was more Americanized. You know what I'm saying?
Sure. Well, and I'm assuming when you came down here, you know, the salaries are obviously a lot different than they were back then. I mean, I think you were making $25,000 a year when you first started with the Hawks, right?
Well, yeah, I guess so. You didn't make a lot of money. I remember. You know, nobody made a lot of money. You came in, and I came to Chicago, and they offered me a contract the next, you know, in the summer. Pretty, you know, a two-way contract. You know what a two-way is?
No.
You got a major league contract and a minor league if you don't make it.
Gotcha. Okay, so there's backup there.
So they protect themselves.
Sure, right.
So, they gave me... not about my major league contract in those days. You know, if I would have been in the minors, I was making like $10,000 maybe.
So,
and anyway, it happened that I got a break, you know, to go there. And I knew they had a really good team still. They had a lot of good. Bobby Hull was still there, and Kenny Warham and a bunch of other guys, Nestorenko, and we had a pretty good team. I just hit it perfect. Couldn't have been any better.
I guess
I had a good team, and you know, it's easy, a lot easier to play. I find it easier to play with a good hockey team than a bad hockey team.
Well, you know, and the first year you were with the Hawks, I mean, this is what's amazing. I mean, you were really, you know, second year in the pros, and you set records in your first year, 15 shutouts.
Well, we had we had a real good team, and we were coming. We were on the verge there, and then 69 to about 74, where we should have won some Stanley Cups, but that damn. I guess I shouldn't say damn. That World Hockey League came in, the World Hockey Association.
Yeah.
And we lost Bobby Hull, and then we lost Stapleton and a couple other guys. And, you know, we were good, but we never had that element to win that big game, you know. And that hurt us. But we had a good team in those days, and I thought we should have won a couple of cups if we would have kept it together.
Day player back with you on 720 WGN. We're talking to Blackhawks legend Tony Esposito. You're considered Tony as the father of the butterfly style, quickest glove hand in the game. Talk to us a little bit about that.
Well, when I came in, people didn't know the so-called, these experts, mainly the Toronto and the Montreal press, because they thought they were, you know, superior to... a lot of other press people, but anyway, they thought that style of going down like that and you relying on reflexes more that couldn't play in the NHL like that at the time, and that's what they thought. And I just picked up on things from other goalies, you know, like Glenn Hall did that a little bit. When he was playing too, and Terry Sawchuk, I watched him out. He used to be down low all the time, so guys used to stand there more, and the puck missed them and went in the net. They said, "Well, I never, didn't see it or something." I just found that you get down low and spread out, the puck comes through the legs, and you got a good chance to stop it.
Well, it's funny. That's the only way I know how to play hockey as far as a goaltender, because I watched you doing it, and my son watches Crawford do it, and pretty much you guys do exactly the same thing.
Well, that's what I was thinking. I don't know why they were critical at the time,
right?
They were, and so it started to develop into that. And I, over the years, as you play more, you get smarter and you perfect it more.
Sure.
In that kind of style, but I just I don't know how I came up with it. I was observing and watching people, how they moved, and but I picked up from, like I said, Glenn Hall was the first that went down like that to a degree, and then like Sawchuk, I picked up to things and picked up from a couple other older goalies that I'd been watched over the years. And I just try to put everything together, and I just thought that, the worst thing you can do is just stand there like a board.
That's right. Absolutely not. Well, and you really did play every angle to win a game, and you've been described by fellow players and your competitors as being very inventive. How inventive were you?
Well, I did things with the equipment. I changed things. I had one for a while there. One time I had like a web on the hockey pants a little bit so that the puck couldn't go through the leg.
Just a little bit.
I made the goal pads. I expanded them a little here and there, to cheat a little bit, I guess.
Sure.
Everybody, why not get a little edge? Just a little edge. It wasn't dramatic.
Right.
Just little things, and then on the catching glove, I widened the catching glove because you know, I looked at the blocker, you know, the other one, and how wide it was, and then I looked in the rule book, and it didn't say they're catching the maximum that could be, I think, the blocker was 4 inches. And the catching glove was not even 3 inches because it just fit over your wrist like.
Right.
So I built it up and I made it the same size as the blocker.
Why not?
And the doors wasn't illegal.
You know, but they used to inspect you, though, before the games, too. So did you have a different something else on when you were inspected? And then did you put on your other gear or did you always have the regular gear on?
I had my regular gear. I just... if they said that wasn't allowed, I try to make an adjustment, you know?
Sure.
And I just kept trying to change the equipment so that it could be more advantageous to goaltenders.
Sure. Right. Absolutely.
Yeah. Why not?
And
that neck piece, you know, I started that stuff way back. I put the thing on the neck to give you, the one that you wrap around your neck.
Yep, yep.
I got hit very early in my career and then throat real hard. And
you got to protect yourself.
I got a pair of scissors and I got sponge, some heavy, that very absorbent heavy sponge we had. And I made myself like a neck piece. And then I did that by myself. And all those things that I guess I was a little bit creative at the time.
I like it. No, I think that was the way to go. And the creativeness got you, you know, you were on the very first All-Star team the first year you were with the franchise as well.
Well, I told you I had a good team. Real good team.
Right. But...
And that helps. You know, you get on All-Star teams when you got great, real good teams, you know that.
Sure, right. Exactly. And of course, that took you to the Cup in 71 as well. Tell me a little bit about the Summit Series in 72. I mean, that is really one of the most talked about series of in hockey history in the early 70s. I think it was in 72 between Canada and Russia.
Well, it was just a very intense series. Don't forget, those were the days when everybody regarded Russia as the enemy, you know?
Right.
You know, remember, we used to think, oh, boy, those Russians are going to blow up the world.
They're going to bomb you at any moment, exactly.
Yeah, you know what I mean.
Yep.
And so we played them, and we played them an eight-game series, and, you know, we didn't, our people, our experts or hockey people that were the scouts and all those people that checked them out for us, you know, before we started playing them, told us that we wouldn't have any problems with them. We had a lot of problems with them.
Right.
So I don't know who was watching that game. I mean, you know, he couldn't see anything. I don't know. He was like Stevie Wonder. Couldn't see anything. Well, I mean, I could look at those guys in 5 minutes and know that they had talent.
But, you know, but as you know, it was funny because during the Summit Series, you know, it, like you said, it did, you know, prove that the gap between, you know, the Canadian NHL players and the top national teams of Europe, you know, which was not only Russia, but it was Czechoslovakia and Sweden and so forth, the talent was, you know, it was much narrower than they thought. I mean, there was just great players on both sides of the series.
Yes, there were, and it was a tremendous series, and... And the eye-opening experience of being in Moscow in 72 for 20 or 30 days, I said 20-some days, it was a really eye-opener to see the way their lifestyle was compared to ours. I mean, it was very military. The people didn't have anything. They were... You know, there wasn't a lot of stores, no blue jeans, you know, that kind of stuff. A lot of them, you know, didn't even have underarm deodorant or anything, you know what
I'm
saying?
Yeah. And that was a time, of course, still...
It was a little pissy.
Yeah. Well, and no, I mean, you know, still the equipment just wasn't up to par at that time. I mean, this was still, you know, the early days of hockey. But, you know, you spent 15 years, you know, with the Hawks, and you made it to just about every playoff season in each of the 15 seasons you were with the franchise, correct?
Yeah, we did okay. we had some good teams and then we had some bad teams. We went through, we had the, like in the 70s, early 70s, we had some real good teams and then a couple of, a few mediocre teams and a few bad teams, I guess, and we started, we resurrected a couple of times, but, you know, we just, we, I'm not being smart, but we just didn't have any real direction.
Okay.
As far as an organization. When I'm not talking about ownership, I'm talking about management. And you know, we just didn't have any direction. We were just piecemeal, you know?
Sure.
Patchwork.
But you still, as a team...
We didn't draft well.
Yeah, but you still, as a team, figured out, at least as a team, you know, how to get to the playoffs every year. I mean, every year for 15 years, you at least got to that point.
Well, we worked... It just seemed like, you know, we were good enough. We had enough talent that we were able to, you know, scratch and claw us a couple of years right in to just get in. But overall, you know, I really wouldn't have liked not to make the playoffs. I mean, that is the epitome of, you know... Of lousy hockey.
I guess so, if you look at it that way. Well, we're talking to Hockey Hall of Famer, Chicago Blackhawks' very own Tony O. More with Tony Esposito coming up next at State Player on 720 WGN. It's State Player on 720 WGN. We're talking to Hockey Hall of Famer, Chicago Blackhawk Tony Esposito. You know, Tony, you used to put that hot sports rub, you know, on your legs and stuff before a game. I'm assuming that just got you, that got you revved up and ready to go.
Yes, I used to use that rub. It was a hot. It used to be called Red Hot, and it was a liniment that would help. I used to have the trainer put it on. Believe it. I didn't put it on.
Okay.
The trainer put it on, and he used to use gloves.
But he did.
Rubber gloves, and he would put it on my front of my legs a little bit, up in the above knee area, and like on the shoulder blades and the back of the shoulders where I was, you know, where I had especially when I had like a pulled muscle a little bit or something, and I used to have that put on. But the thing with the liniment was, when you put it on, it wouldn't burn until you start to sweat.
Oh, okay.
So when I had these big bruises, I used to have to put on the bruises, too, because our equipment wasn't very good, and I was black, and I always had two or three major bruises. And a couple of the guys had got I forget who it was now, but he got a... He had this big sore little spot on his leg and this and that, and he's seen me, and I didn't show any signs of pain or anything, you know,
right.
from the heat. And he put it on his leg there, and I didn't say anything. Then he goes and warm up, and he's warming up, and the more he's warming up, he's starting to sweat now, and all of a sudden he's really having problems with his leg.
I bet he is.
It got so hot, he went right off the ice in the middle of warm up and went down there and had to take his stuff off and get it all taken off with alcohol and everything.
I bet he did, yeah.
But, yeah, that kind of thing, but it didn't bother me. I was too focused on trying to win hockey games, and if that helped me, you know, where I had a bad sore or pulled muscle and that sort of numbed it a little bit.
Did you have any rituals besides that you would do before a game? You know, hockey, you know, in the NHL is all about tradition. I mean, is there specific things that you kind of did before every game?
Well, basically, when I came to the rink, I pretty much followed the same pattern. You know, when I get there and I would have steps like I get in, you know, and then, like, you know, you have things. First, you take your clothes off and put on your underwear and all that stuff, you know, and get your equipment ready. And then at a certain time, I would go into the training room. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
Get the liniment or whatever else I needed, some tape job or whatever is hurting, and then get back out there and I'd have a, you know, I'd dress the same way. And that usually athletes put on their equipment the same way, you know, the first one leg and then the other leg.
And, yeah.
And same thing, always repetition, always over the game, every game. But the thing I found that these things, when I came to the rink and everything triggered preparation.
Sure.
And that was the next step, you know. And by the time I was getting all my equipment on, I was starting to sweat because I was getting, you know, my adrenaline was starting to pump, huh?
Well, absolutely.
I was starting to get ready. And that's what worked. And, you know, and so by the time game time comes, I didn't want to lose game or play bad because I wasn't ready.
Right.
I've played bad. I've had bad games. Everybody has bad games.
Sure.
But it wasn't because I wasn't ready to play. And I was ready to play, and if I had a bad game, I didn't go after the game and say, geez, I should have done this or should have done that. I was ready. And if I had a bad game, I just shrugged it off.
Well, that's a great segue for me. What was the most memorable game that you ever played in your career? What was it?
The most memorable game I ever played was the game when Montreal Canadiens were playing us, and I think the last game of the year in Chicago Stadium, and they needed to get New York Rangers had won, I think, and Montreal needed 5 goals to get in the playoffs. So we were playing the game, and we had them down. We were about playing them, and we had them down like 4-2 or something, or 3-2 or 4-2 after a second period. So they needed 5 goals. So they played the entire third period with no goalie.
Wow.
They played an extra attacker. They just wanted to get the 5 goals.
Right.
They didn't care what they lost by. So that's how it was. And every time we got the puck, you couldn't hear anything in that whole Chicago Stadium.
I bet.
You couldn't hear a whistle. You couldn't hear anything. Because every time we got the puck, you know, everybody's going crazy.
Yeah.
We ended up beating them, like, if I had to guess, I know we got 10. And I think they had 3 at the end of the game. But, you know, they were in our end and they're buzzing, you know, because you got the power play, so to speak, extra skater. And every time we got the puck, you know, we'd go down the ice and try to get a goal. And we scored like 6 goals in the third period. So can you imagine the noise in that building?
Yeah, I'm sure it was. I've seen it at the United Center. I can't imagine at the stadium. It's been a long time since I experienced it.
But that was a crazy game. Who's ever played a game when the goaltender's not in the net? 6 attackers.
Yeah, that's wild. That's absolutely wild. When was that? Was that late in the 70s, or when was that exactly?
It was in the mid-70s.
Mid-70s, okay. Okay.
I would say 74 or 5, around there, maybe.
Well, you know, you retired in 84, and you were inducted into the Hockey Hall of Fame in 88, just 4 years later, and it was 20 years later to the date that you were in the Hall of Fame that you and Bobby and Stan were welcomed back to the organization with Rocky at the helm and John and Jay Blunk and, you know, as ambassadors to the franchise. What did that mean to you?
Well, to tell you, it was a tremendous feeling. It meant an awful lot to me to come back, be invited back. You know, you're an old player that hasn't been around the organization in several years. And to be invited back and have that special game, you know, game presentation they had when they brought us back as ambassadors. They had one for me. First they brought Bobby and Stan in. They had one together. And then they had a night for me.
I remember that.
And it was tremendous.
I was there. I was there.
I felt so good. Were you?
Yeah, I was there. Absolutely.
I felt so great. It was a wonderful night, and they brought me back into the fold. And I was so appreciative of the way it was done with Rocky and John and Jay Blunk, you know.
Well, Tony, you are part of an American legacy. 886 games, 423 wins, 151 ties, and 76 shutout victories for you.
Well, Dave, thank you for having me on. I really enjoyed this little talk, And I wish you all the best, and we'll see you at the games.
All right, sounds good. Thank you, Tony. Hall of Famer Tony Esposito. All right, hours of more fun ahead. It's Dave Player on 720 WGN.